Are you ready for a war?
It's a trap.
Game over, man. Game over.
You just killed a helicopter with a car.
I was out of bullets.
Say what again? Say what again? I dare you.
Hello, everybody, and happy holidays from the BCD Flicksters, for Flicksters like you. And we're going to celebrate the holidays by reviewing a movie about drugs, sex, and some rock and roll. So, today is December 14th, 2012, and we are reviewing Trainspotting, directed by Danny Boyle. Joining me, as always, is...
Bam of the Great.
And all the way from Kentucky, Mr...
Daniel Stull.
All right, that's right, folks. We're recording across the country today.
A little bit, just a little bit.
Yeah, okay.
Small portion of the country.
It is our Christmas break, and Daniel is back with his family for the holiday break that lasts about a month. Me and Bama are still stranded here in Oklahoma, and we're doing this as our kind of our test recording podcast. So if me and Bama sound like we're coming through a computer speaker or something, it's because we are. Okay, well, we'll start off like normal. And start off with the box office, guys. Let me tell you, it was a shocker. It was a big one. It shook it up. It's Skyfall. It moved up to number one after being out for 5 weeks for $10.8 million. That's right. It took down Breaking Dawn.
Yay. I'm actually okay with you doing the whole weird whisper Skyfall thing since it took that down. Stupid. Sparkling vampires.
The sparkling vampires are no more. They're still in the top five, though. So number two, Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny beat down those vampires.
That's right. They're more powerful.
That's right. They are. Especially the holiday spirit and the power of hope with $10.4 million. And then Breaking Dawn, still in the top five, but not number one.
I'm still unhappy about it.
It is $9.2 million. And then Mr. Lincoln, right there.
Still going strong.
Four score and 8 years ago made $8.9 million. And then lastly, Life of Pi has been incredibly consistent, staying at number five for the last 3 weeks when it's holding at $8.3 million. And we've all, since we're on week number three, we've already talked about these to death at this point. So that's all of that.
I still hate Breaking Dawn.
Well, you haven't even seen it.
Exactly. I still
if you want to read a great review of Breaking Dawn, there's this paper called The Moore Monthly that recently just published a review of that. Some guy, pretty awesome critic.
I happen to have a copy.
That critic wrote it was pretty awesome, I think. I think he was pretty spot on. So, Daniel, any thoughts on the box office all the way from Kentucky?
I'm not happy that Breaking Dawn's in there, but, you know, everything seemed kind of low this week, actually. I guess it was kind of a slow week.
Yeah, you know, nothing big has really come out since Breaking Dawn. Oh, well, sorry, since Life of Pi, Lincoln, the Thanksgiving Rush. So it's just kind of like everyone's holding their money back for the behemoth that's about to come through this weekend. It's of a gargantuan proportions. You could even say it's like a troll in the room. So
it's a tiny troll.
It's got hairy feet. That's right. It's the There and Back. The Unexpected Journey, The Hobbit. So that comes out this weekend. We'll talk about it more later in the podcast. All right, well, we're going to go ahead and move on to our weekly news. Daniel, what is going on in the world of entertainment in Kentucky?
Well, in Kentucky, specifically where I'm from, nothing at all is going on, because I come from a small town in Kentucky. However, I've got two little small things that I kind of want to...
Is there a banjo?
No, there is not a banjo.
Okay, sorry. You said you two had
them. God of War Ascension they've released a beta date. It's going to be the beginning of January. You're going to be able to play the beta on that. It's actually very multiplayer focused, so if you played God of War in the past, they've never had a multiplayer, so kind of interesting to see what they're going to do with that, but they have that coming out in the beginning of January.
Interesting. I mean, like, that is interesting because God of War is such a single player focused game. I don't see how you do a hack and slash multiplayer other than co-op, but we'll see what happens.
But the second one that I had was that James Cameron, there were some people talking to James Cameron. He's actually going through a legal process where some people are talking about that they should have some rights to the movie Avatar based on a script. Anyway,
they want a piece of that pie, huh?
Exactly. They want some of the money that Avatar was able to make. But one thing that came out was he wrote a script talking about where he got the inspiration for the movie and stuff like that. And one of the things that he said was that he left out material that was not used in Avatar that he could used for sequels. So then people started talking about the possibility of Avatar 2, Avatar 3, things like that. So that was released. So there's definitely some talk about doing a sequel to that. And I thought that was kind of interesting and wanted to hear what you guys kind of thought about the idea of making an Avatar 2.
Here's what I think Avatar 2 little subtitle is going to be. Okay, this is Avatar 2, The Tale of Fern Gully.
Oh my gosh, man, I'm about to punch you in the face. Okay, you know what? You know what, folks?
Trolling.
I have never seen a movie bandwagon so hardcore, like anti-bandwagon a movie, okay? When Avatar came out, I remember I was with everyone. I'm like, man, this movie's awesome. I know it's not like, I knew it wasn't the greatest thing ever, but I'm like, you know what? The visuals and a lot of the stuff James Cameron was doing, he was telling a story we'd already seen before in a very new and original light, meshing sci-fi and fantasy and bringing all his elements together to tell a very interesting story, okay? Well, everyone was with me for about a week, and then about 3 weeks later, everyone's like, you know what, that movie sucks. It's too popular. I hate it. That movie, it was cool, and then I hated it. So.
Well, it did kind of get annoying after a while. Well, it was...
I understand why people rag on it, but it's like one of those movies that, like, the same people who were telling me that, oh, that was awesome, like, 2 weeks later were like, oh, that movie wasn't really that great, you know?
Well, I mean, as I've said before, you know, visually amazing movie. Loved it. Characters, pretty well done. I mean, just the big thing for me, the story has been told before. Not in the same way, but very similar. So, you know, that was the thing that threw me.
Yeah, and I don't like the Fern Gully comparison because I feel like it's a little degrading towards the material. I mean, there's a couple of similar themes as Fern Gully, but the thing is, honestly, if this movie rips off anything, it's definitely Dances with Wolves.
True.
I like Avatar. I own it on Blu-ray. It's not like my favorite movie ever made, but I do enjoy it. I like James Cameron. I'm interested to see a sequel, but I'll be honest, by this point, like, I feel like that ship has sailed. Like, I don't feel like a sequel of Avatar would be as big as Avatar. I don't feel like an Avatar 2 would be as big as Avatar was, because I think it's just kind of those things that came and went, people liked it or they hated it, and people don't really care anymore.
Yeah, I don't even know really what the story would be. I mean, I guess you could deal with how he incorporates himself into the Na'vi, because now he actually is a Na'vi, but other than, I don't know where they would go with it, really.
Well, I know James Cameron talked about exploring, like, other parts of the planet we haven't seen before. He mentioned going underwater. He's talked about a lot of ideas he's had in the past. He's talked about going underwater, exploring, like, a moon.
Dark side of the moon.
Dark side. Yeah, Pink Floyd will be there.
Mysterious as the dark side of the moon.
Oh, gosh.
That's no moon.
Oh my gosh, how many moon puns can we throw into one thing? But no, I mean, I'm interested to see where it goes. I'm not particularly excited, though. Let's put it that way.
Moon over karma.
Oh my gosh. Sorry.
So anyway.
Yeah, so that's kind of what I think. We'll see what happens, Mr. Cameron. I respect you, but I'm also not exactly stoked to hear more about a sequel. I'm just kind of like, well, whatever. Bama, what did you have for us this week?
Well, as we've talked about on this podcast before, I know everyone's wanting to know if this is going to be true or not, if Joseph Gordon-Levitt is going to have a guest spot in the Superman movie, and if he's going to be Batman in some upcoming films. Interesting about this, Chris Nolan was asked about this, being the man he is. He basically says, well, you know, I really can't talk about that. I mean, come on, that's just something I can't talk about. So he's kind of just—he's not giving us anything. I mean, if you know this guy at all, it's either this can tell you one of two things: either it's possibly true, or it's a completely made-up thing, and he's just banking off the fact of this and just trying to make himself more popular.
You know, he doesn't seem like the type of guy who does that, though. It's just really odd because in the past when they've asked him stuff that ends up being true, he's kind of plays the same kind of cards. He's like, well, he doesn't say no, but he also gives you like that vague, like, what does he mean by that answer? Because he doesn't like to, you know, that's frustrating.
So, I mean, we'll keep reporting on this as we get news. So, if for every podcast, I think I may have some more news.
Gotta love the rumor mill. One rumor of this thing a week, you know. So, Christopher Nolan, by omission of giving us an answer, you were opening the floodgate for rumors to pile around the internet.
And I will make up rumors.
Oh, my gosh. All right. Folks, my news item for the week is a bit of a news item. We've talked about this Man of Steel trailer before. We've all talked about it. You guys know I'm very excited about this, as I've mentioned many times on this podcast. And I honestly was not expecting to see this trailer until I saw The Hobbit this weekend. The first full trailer for Man of Steel came up on the internet live on Tuesday. And holy smokes, my Superman nerd freakout, nerdgasm, whatever you want to call it, it was off the charts. You don't honestly see a whole lot, but just the fact that you actually see him in the tights and he's flying around, and it's this whole movie, it's got like a darker, edgier tone to it. Like,
not too dark.
Not Batman dark or anything like that, but it plays off the fact that, like, maybe the world he's trying to save doesn't really want him. They don't accept him. There's one part where young Clark asks his dad, should I have let that bus of kids die because by saving that bus of kids, they found out who I was. Should I have just let him die? And he's like, well, maybe. So, you know what I mean? Like, so there's definitely this edgier take on Superman, more realistic, perhaps. But I don't know. I'm really excited to see. You don't really get a whole lot of look at it. It looks like you got little glimpses at Krypton getting blown up and lots of cool stuff. Superman flying around, him talking to Pa Kent, his mom. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm super stoked for this movie. It is probably one of my most anticipated movies for next year, if not the most anticipated movie of next year. And I got chills watching this trailer. Just little stuff like Superman walking around with his cape flying in the window. He's like, oh, it looks so awesome. So, news item is the Superman trailer. If you haven't seen it, stop what you're doing now, pause the podcast, and go watch the video right now.
No, finish the podcast.
No, you pause it, watch Superman, and come back.
Okay. No, finish the podcast.
Oh, my gosh. Well, on a lesser note, I have another small little tidbit of news here. So it turns out, hopefully there's some Arrested Development fans out there, because as of Wednesday, Arrested Development, a cult hit that has been on Netflix, and that Netflix is resurrecting from the dead. They had a 10-episode order, the new season that's coming out in the spring on Netflix, and Netflix actually asked for more, so now they extended the 10-episode season to 15 episodes. So for all of you looking forward to that, that's something to look forward to. I am not a sitcom comedy type of guy, I've expressed on this thing, but Arrested Development is absolutely brilliant, and it's stinking hilarious. So if you get a chance, check it out, Arrested Development. First three seasons on Netflix, and they are resurrecting it. The show that has been off the air for years, they're bringing it back next spring on Netflix. All right, well, that's all we've got for news. Let's go ahead and move on to our review of the week, Trainspotting. All right, Trainspotting is a movie about a man named Renton, who is played by Ewan McGregor, and he is deeply immersed in the Edinburgh drug scene, and tries to clean up and get out, despite the allure of the drugs and the influence of his friends. That's kind of the base premise of the movie. We'll get a lot more into that here in a second, but I want to get initial reactions first. Daniel, what did you think of this movie?
Obi-Wan on drugs. That was my first reaction to that. But I don't know. Like, I thought it was a weird movie. It was definitely different and unique, a lot different than anything I'd ever seen before. Don't know if I really liked it. I think the point that it was trying to make, it was very successful at doing, but that doesn't mean that I really liked it. So that was kind of my first reaction to it.
All right, Bama, how about you?
Okay. I'm going to be honest here. I didn't really enjoy... Well, I didn't entirely enjoy this movie that much. I did like the actors. The actors were good. I thought they did very well together. Great scenes, great cinematography. Just not a good enough story for me. For me, I mean, this was like some really long anti-drug commercial to me, basically. And it's just, I was interested in watching this, but it kind of fell through the floor for me.
All right, gotcha. I've got mixed feelings about this movie. I think this movie is one of a kind. I think it gives us an insight. It's really great at giving us an inside look at what does the life of a junkie look like? What does he do? How does he connect with his friends? What is going through his head? And I think this movie excels at that. And you really get this great, great understanding of what these types of people who are hooked on this type of thing, what kind of thoughts are going through their heads, and how do they live their lives. So they're not just junkies. You actually humanize junkies. Not in a way to say that it's okay. In fact, I think the movie's counter to that. But it's showing you, hey, here's how we feel, here's why we do what we do, and here's some stuff like that. I think it does a great job at that. And honestly, I think the movie's great. It's not one of my personal favorites, and I would say this is not a movie I would recommend unless you were really serious about watching a movie that gives you a realistic take on drugs, because this movie is dark. It's actually kind of a dark humor, which I found myself laughing at a lot of times, but you're only laughing at it because it's so bad, like how dark it is. Like, there's a point where a baby dies in this movie, and you're like just laughing, and I'm laughing at it. I'm like, man, this is bad. And that's kind of, I think the movie's kind of definitely, it's definitely going for something like that. But this is not a movie I would ever put on my shelf, and we'll get more into specifics in a minute. But it is one that I think is worth watching, especially if you're interested in looking at a character study of a junkie or junkies and what they look at. We're going to go ahead and start talking about our impressions with the drug culture and its portrayals. I think that's probably the biggest strength of the movie. And I'm going to start our discussion off with a couple quotes here. We're going to start with the first one, the opening quote of the movie. And this is actually shorthand. It's actually a much longer quote than this, but I shortened it a little bit. Starting with Ewan McGregor, so if you can hear his Scottish accent that I can't possibly demonstrate. Choose life. Choose a job. Choose a career. Choose a family. Choose a big TV. Choose washing machines, cars, compact disc players, and electrical tin openers. Choose good health, low cholesterol, and dental insurance. Choose fixed interest mortgage repayments. Choose a starter home. Choose your friends. And then skipping ahead, and he comes back to choose life. Why would I want to do a thing like that? I choose not to choose life. I choose something else. And the reasons? There are no reasons. Who needs reasons when you've got heroin? That is the opening quote of the movie that gets you inside to, the head of Renton. And the movie kind of takes off from there. You get to see a day in the life. What did you guys think about how this, the drug culture? And I've got more quotes I want to talk about in a little bit. But what did you guys, like how the movie portrayed this drug culture?
Obviously, I don't know anything about the drug culture in the sense that I've never been a part of it or experienced it. But I would like to think that that's a pretty fairly accurate description of it. Very dark, some really messed up and disgusting things happening. So, in the sense of liking it, I don't like the culture of it, but I think they portray it in a very strong way. And so, in that sense, yeah, I liked the portrayal of the culture, the drug culture, and things like that. There was some very disturbing things that took place. There was several times where I was just really disgusted by what was going on. So I think that in that way, it definitely portrays it in a very accurate way.
I would agree with you, Stoll. Like you said, I've never been a part of drug culture, never really want to be. But, you know, I've heard stories from friends from the past, you know, of how, you know, they used to take drugs and all that, and some of the stories that they've told me about, you know, how it feels and just all the weirdness that happens whenever they took drugs. And, you know, it really matches up with how this movie portrayed that. A lot of disturbing things in this movie. Like you mentioned, the baby of a friend of Renton's dying basically because of neglect. Because, I mean, she's wanting to do drugs all the time. She doesn't care about taking care of her baby. And, you know, I had a moment of sadness, but that quickly went away, and it ended up being more so anger, especially towards the woman, because it's like, this is your baby. You need to do everything you can to take care of this,
right?
Of this living being that is a part of you. And it's just like, it's so upsetting to me. It makes me angry.
Yeah. Which I think it totally should be, you know, parents neglecting their kids for drugs. The reason I ask this question is because I think this is going to play a great deal on how much you can appreciate the movie or understand the movie. I obviously, like you two, have never been in the depths of the drug culture. I've been around people who do drugs, but not like when they're actually together doing drugs. And this movie is very interesting because you get inside this culture in a way that I haven't seen in another movie. Perhaps other than maybe A Requiem for a Dream does a couple of similar things, but this one, it it looks the fun side of it. Now, not to say that this movie celebrates their drug use. I mean, at times it does, but then for every time they're out having a blast, there's always consequences that happen later. The baby being the most obvious one, but like they get ripped off, they get drugged to the hospital. I mean, all sorts of different things that happen to them. So, you know, and the main character at the beginning, he changes that throughout the movie. At the beginning of the movie, he's all about it because he doesn't really care. It's just life. And he says, one quote he has right here is, he says, shooting up heroin's like this. Take the best orgasm you've ever had, multiply it by 1,000, and you're still nowhere near it. And he's talking about, like, when he shoots up. And the movie's pretty disturbing. It doesn't shy away from cutting away or anything like that. It doesn't play around. Like, you see these people actually shooting up. And I'm not really a person who's particularly bothered by needles ever, but like the way when you see people injecting this dirty stuff, so you know the drugs and all the other stuff in their blood, it's just kind of unnerving. And to see how it's and within them it's celebrated, also unnerving. But then again, like I said, the movie's not like oh go out and do drugs. It's kind of painting it in this more. Well, here's this side of it, but hey, guess what? For every there's always a consequence.
It definitely shows the momentary excitement and love of it, but then it does bring it back to reality and the negative effects of
it. Yeah, you get the immediate gratification. Yeah. Do you guys think that it was necessary to be as straight as it was? And like I said, it's pretty straight. Like, they don't really shy away from showing any of it.
Yeah, I definitely think that's something that we should applaud the film for doing. It wasn't afraid to just show what's really going on. It wasn't afraid to not go places because of what the audience might think. It was just like, hey, you know what, this is what happens, and we're just going to go and show you that, and it's going to make you feel uncomfortable, and it should make you feel uncomfortable because there are uncomfortable things happening. And so I think that's one of the strongest parts of the film, is that it's not afraid to go to those disturbing elements that I struggled with at times watching. And there's some disgusting things. And for example, towards the beginning of the film, Renton is he's constipated and he takes these pills and he becomes no longer constipated, and he goes to this absolutely disgusting, filthy, like terrible bathroom. Like I wanted to puke
in that bathroom.
Exactly. I wanted to puke just looking at the bathroom. And then he had to go and sit on a toilet that was broken, and you know, and it was disgusting. And you hear all the noises and all that he's making and stuff like that, and it's just, oh, it's so disgusting.
You see him, and then you see him while he's high, he, like, has in his head, he, like, dives into the toilet to get his drugs.
Yeah,
like,
after he's used the toilet. Oh, it was disgusting. And
he was having, like, a little bit of a trip, like, a little bit of a, like, he was seeing it in his head, but it was the after effects of the drugs. Yeah. Like, it was kind of funny, too. That's what I'm saying. Like, they played off his laughs a little bit because you're like, oh my gosh, he's sticking his hand there. But then, like, he actually dives head first into the toilet, and then you see, oh, he's actually on a trip.
Yeah.
Where he's, like, swimming around. And it was hard to watch, but it was also, there's also that little, like, to diffuse the tension a little bit. It was, oh, this is ridiculous, you know?
Yeah, you know, I think it's definitely something that I applaud the film for doing that and not being afraid to just do that and not hide some things because the audience is going to be uncomfortable with that. So that's something I think that we should applaud. It's definitely a strong point of the film.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of moments where the intense scenes are kind of diffused in somewhat of a comical way. But as far as me watching this film, you know, I still had, you know, it's like he's still on drugs at this point. He's still living that life. So, I mean, it's, yes, I did find it comical that he, you know, just did a full head dive right into the toilet and was searching for drugs in an underwater world, and then somehow had enough breath to go underwater and then swim back up and crawl out of the toilet. But it's still the fact that it's still all about drugs to him at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, now he does move into, I don't know, we might save a little bit for the spoiler section. There's not a whole lot of plot to this movie specifically, so we might go ahead and open up the gate here in a minute, but there's a point in the movie where about halfway through the movie where he cleans up, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But so what I'm hearing is you guys say is you think it's pretty effective, the way it's used.
Yeah, I would say it's necessary to show it in this kind of way. It's very effective. May have been a couple of moments that it may have gone a little bit far, but not, like, you know, way too far. So I mean, I think for a little bit older audience, this would be a very appropriate movie.
Yeah, yeah, don't show this one to your kids.
Yeah, it's a rated R film. I think very necessary and very effective. Kind of bordering the line of, is it overly necessary?
Yeah, I definitely agree with Soul Substitute. I think that the real the realism we get at times, or maybe not realism is not the right word, but like they had the balls to like be like, okay, here it is, and here's it's nasty and it's hard to watch, but guess what? This is what junkies do. That I find very interesting, and I think definitely when I said Stole, I am applauding. You know, I think fantastic part of the movie because it doesn't back away, it doesn't cop out, it doesn't cut away, which is great because I think issues like this that a lot of people find disgusting should be discussed about what they're seeing, because that's kind of the intention of the movie, to say, oh snap, man, this is messy stuff. This is dark, messy stuff. One scene I want to move out in particular that for me I just thought was excellent, and I mean, honestly, it was the detox scene, because like I said earlier, there is a point in the movie where he goes in and his parents, he gets taken to the hospital because he's OD'd. I shouldn't say like OD, he didn't kill himself, but he was messed up, high as a kite, to the hospital, and he couldn't even speak. He was just kind of laying there like in a comatose type state, type of thing.
Yeah, and even
catatonic state. Yeah,
that scene was probably one of my favorites from this, because like after he injects himself with the drugs, he kind of sinks into the floor.
Yeah,
a little bit, and you know you kind of he can still kind of see from this perspective of he's like trapped in the floor as he's going through. People are taking, like, they get a taxi to take him to the hospital, and then, you know, it shows him going on a gurney to the room, but he's still seeing it from the perspective of being sunk in into the floor.
Yeah, he's stuck. Yeah, and by the way, I want to say that was one great use of visual effects in this movie, was the way they edited and manipulated and stuff like that, where he's sunk into the floor, and then the mix of visuals with the soundtrack, because this had a great soundtrack. It was fitting for what they were trying to do. Like, it was all about bringing you to that emotional reaction at that time, mm-hmm. and it was powerful when it happened because of the way they used it all, and you definitely felt like you actually, whoa, this guy really is hot, and like the way the music played it all out. But he gets taken to the hospital, and then his parents come and get him, and then they lock him in a room with some water, some buckets, you know, the whole nine yards, and then he just lays there on his bed, and you see him get this whole detox, and he starts wigging out and having hallucinations and bad dreams and all this stuff, and you see what's going on with him mentally and emotionally, and you see the dead babies crawling on the ceiling. It's messed up. It is trippy. It is messed up, and you're like, you should be unnerved by what you're watching, but it was such an excellent scene because he came out of it stronger when it was all done, and it was interesting to see what does the inside look like. And obviously, we can't speak for all junkies who clean up, but like, you know, what is it? What is a taste of what is that? What is like for them? And I imagine that the person who wrote the book the movie was based on probably had an idea himself of what he was looking at, because it was a really moving scene for me. I mean, unnerving, but I definitely felt like, wow, they really are getting to the psychology of what is this life as a junkie like? What is it like as a junkie? How hard is it as a junkie to clean up? And because I think a lot of times in our society, like, oh, they do drugs, they can quit any time. We kind of write it up and say, well, they've made bad decisions, they can easily make good decisions. But really, it is a real battle. I think this movie does a really great job of portraying that also. All right, we'll go ahead and talk about a couple of the characters here. What did you think about Renton as a character? And instead of going to a strict spoiler section, let's just go ahead and talk about the movie at open-ended. There's not a lot to spoil, per se, so...
Yeah, it's pretty much just a straight...
Well, straight character arc, and we'll tell you guys, and you can decide if you want to watch it afterwards. So Stoll, we're going to talk about Renton's character arc, where he ends at, and kind of talk about what you think about it. Renton's character arc, Renton, who's played by Ian McGregor, very interesting because he goes from junkie to he cleans up, but then his problem is he goes back to hang out with his friends, and he understands that it's an uphill battle when he's hanging out with his junkie friends when he's cleaned up, and eventually he goes back to the drugs, and it was really sad to see, honestly. What did you guys like how his arc kind of panned out? What do you think it says about his character? Do you think it was well done?
Well, the happy-go-lucky ending for this film would have been, oh, he got off drugs, he's found a really good and stable job where he's making money, and it would end right there. One thing about this that I will praise about the story is that it does show that even someone who has come out of great adversity can still fall back into what they overcame. So, I mean, very, very interesting way to do it. But I think it was interesting way to do it.
Did you like his character?
I did like his character. Kind of a neurotic, I'm going to do whatever I want kind of person. Never really seen Ewan McGregor play this type of character before, so I really enjoyed the portrayal of this character. All
right. Stoll, how about you?
I don't know. I thought it was very interesting. I don't know. It's really interesting. What ends up happening is that he and some of his friends, they decide that they want to go sell all these drugs for a bunch of money, and they end up all four of them traveling together, go and sell it together, so they're going to split the cost, and they end up selling the drugs for $16,000, so they each get a $4,000 split. One of the buddies, was he loved to get into fights and just like beat the heck out of people, and so when they're sitting there with all four of them, so they're sitting there in this bar together, he starts this fight, and you can start seeing that he starts thinking about possibly, while this fight's going on, stealing the bag of $16,000 and just running away with it. So then later on, he decides to go ahead and do that. And so he steals the bag and just abandons them all and leaves. Now, he does leave $4,000 for one of his friends, that one that he felt that he actually had a friendship with. The other two he felt like they were just kind of there, and they were buddies, but they weren't real friends. But he just kind of takes the money and leaves. And I thought it was really interesting, the quote, one of the quotes he said as he was leaving, because the whole process of this movie, he's narrating and kind of giving you his own mental thoughts on what's going on in his life. He says something like to the effect of this: yeah, I stole this money. I stole it because I'm a bad person, and I'm going to go try to make a life for myself, but it's because I stole this money because I was a bad person. I thought that was a really interesting thing that he said at the end. I don't know if I like his character. I didn't necessarily care about him in a deep sense or anything like that, which that's part of the point, though, because he's on, you know, drugs, and it's just this terrible situation. But I don't know. I'm really not for him, but I'm not necessarily against him either.
Yeah, just kind of watching. You know, I didn't like this guy. I think he was kind of a douche. I think he had good reasons for what he was doing. You know, as a drug addict coming out of it, I think I was really disappointed when he went back. But I think you know, I gotta praise the way they did the character too, because I agree with Bama. I'm really glad this didn't end on a happy-go-lucky note. I'm glad he didn't end on a happy-go-lucky note, because it does show us a different side of this. It wasn't like a success story. It was a more realistic take. I liked that he fell back into it, but at the same time, I'm torn, because I've felt invested in the character, and after seeing him come out of it, it was like, oh, that's awesome. I'm really glad. So for me, I felt invested enough that when he went back, I was so disappointed.
Yeah.
Because he made that decision. Now, it's bittersweet, because I think the movie is ballsier and more realistic and better for doing that. But it was also, as a person who's invested in the character, I was like, man, I really wish you hadn't done that. So I think the movie's great. I think it speaks to how good the movie is, because I was that invested with the character. At the end of the day, though, he ends up, the very friends he let corrupt him or, you know, pressure him into doing drugs again are the ones he backstabs. So I understand why he does it. And I say fair game. The guys, cause the thing is, all these guys are scumbags, every single one of them. They know it. And I think I'll read a little bit of the last quote. It's a very long quote, because he has lots of monologues here. It says, now I've justified this to myself in all sorts of ways. It wasn't a big deal, just minor betrayal. Or we'd outgrow each other, you know, that sort of thing. But let's face it, I ripped him off. So my so-called mates. But baby, I couldn't give a crap about him. And Sick Boy, well, he would have done the same to me if he'd only thought of it first. And Spud, well, okay. I felt sorry for Spud. He never hurt anybody. So why did I do it? I could offer you a million different answers. All false. The truth is that I'm a bad person. That's going to change. I'm going to change. This is the last sort of thing. Now I'm cleaning up and moving on, going straight and choosing life. I'm looking forward to it already. I'm going to be just like you. And that's where he goes back into the opening quote, where he goes, the job, the family, the big TV, the washing machine, the car, the compact disc. And he says, I am going to do all this stuff until the day I die. So he justifies it in his mind by saying, well, this is a bad thing, and I'm a bad person, but I'm doing it so I can be a good person. Because he feels like he was a good person, and then his friends pulled him back in, and now he's going to step back, stab him in the back and become a good person again. So, I mean, I like him, but I don't. I think he's. I understand what he does it, and I think maybe
I was the ultimate scumbag. Now I'm gonna be good.
Because I'm a bad person, I can now be a good person. So it's kind of ends justifies the means types of things. And I think it's very realistic because human beings aren't that simple. But yeah, I didn't like him. I think he was kind of a jerk in the end overall because he went from a jerk to being a good person, and he's
back
like, well,
back to being a jerk.
Back to being a jerk. A self-centered, didn't care about anyone himself. He just wanted to get a kick, get a fix. You know,
but he leaves Spud the $4,000, man.
He did okay. He did give Spud the $4,000 because he felt bad. But I mean, come on.
he felt bad because the two of them got in some legal trouble, and Spud ended up going to jail for a little while. But he ended up not getting the same sentence as Spud. He was I mean, he didn't go free. He had, you know, some probation stuff put on him, but. Shortly after that happened, they were all, their family was kind of gathered together, you know, just to, you know, kind of talk things through after that, and, you know, just kind of, I guess, wanting to kind of feel better about, you know, this could have gone really bad, but, you know, it kind of turned out okay for some of us. And, you know, he ends up saying, you know, I should have gone to jail instead of Spud.
Yeah, he did say that.
It should not have been him. It should have been me. And, you know, there are some redeeming qualities while he's still kind of being a jerk.
Yeah. No, I think so. I mean, I think that's a good, the way they portray human beings is so great. It's not good guy, bad guy. It's, they're all bad. We're all bad guys. We're all good guys at the same time. We have aspects of both, particularly with your Renton, who does good things and bad things, and does things that we don't really know if they're good or bad. He just kind of does them. So I think his character was brilliant. The way they did him was brilliant. I just didn't like him. I wanted to talk about Begbie a little bit and see what you guys think. Begbie, now, Begbie was played by Robert Carlyle. I think that's how you pronounce his name. He's a guy you might know from Stargate Universe. He was in 28 days, and, or sorry, 28 weeks later. He was the father who ends up abandoning his wife. He was in The World Is Not Enough, and he is currently on Once Upon a Time as Rumpelstiltskin. This is the guy who played the guy who was getting fights. This guy who had always, he was a hothead, he was always drinking, always punching people, he was always angry. I, as much as I enjoyed this character, and believe me, I did enjoy it, it seemed a little over the top, maybe a little too much. I mean, I enjoyed it, but it was like, you know, it almost breaks that edgier feel the movie has because of how ridiculous he is. Did you guys agree, or do you think he was over the top, or it's just my imagination?
I think he was definitely over the top, and I think that was, I mean, obviously it was intentional, but I mean, yeah, I definitely agree that he was over the top in some instances.
It's hard to take, and like the scenes he was in, it was almost hard to take seriously on several occasions. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I will agree that his character was over the top. What I think would be interesting, I know the three of us have seen this movie, Heavyweight.
Oh, classic.
Very, very classic film, still hilarious. I mean, because we saw it, what, earlier this school year.
Yeah, we saw it earlier this school year. We're all like, you know, 20 older, watching this movie, grew up on this kid, and we loved it.
And we're just laughing our heads off.
Oh, gosh, it was hilarious.
But what I would love to see is Robert Carlyle's character, Begbie, meeting up with Ben Stiller's character of Tony Perkins, and
yeah,
them
awesome
and them like getting into a fight with each other, just because of how over the top the argument would be between them.
Well, Begbie would punch him in the face with beer.
Well, true, but I mean,
the power of beer for his advantage.
The power of beer versus the power of nature of Tony Perkins. Of Perkisize, I will. I don't think he's quite as over the top as that type of. He is pretty over the top, and I mean, he just gets his joys out of, you know, beating people up. He doesn't do drugs.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing about him. He doesn't do drugs.
He doesn't do drugs, which
he's always trying to scam people with his deal. But
yeah,
he actually didn't. He won't. You know,
he'll sell it, but he won't do it, which is odd.
Yeah, well, he's a businessman. No, he's a businessman. It's all business. So that makes sense.
I mean, you know, some people will say, you know,
yeah, I'm only going to sell it, but then they end up doing it anyway.
Yeah, sometimes.
But, I mean, at least from what I've heard. But
he watched Breaking Bad. There's a lot of people who do, who saw him at the time doing that show.
Yeah, he it's a character that gets his kicks off literally kicking people's butts, and I find him hilarious. This character is where most of the comedy comes from. A few other characters have some comedic spots. Spud has some. Well, Spud's just kind of how to describe him? Kind of a screw up, and because of his him being a screw up, he kind of gets into these situations where he just turns into a comical situation. But definitely, Bigby is over the top, but a very lovable character.
He's likable, but yeah, just a little ridiculous. I don't know, but minor complaint because I did enjoy his character. Immensely, but just wondered if you missed that. We're gonna go ahead and move out of it. I mean, one thing I'd like to mention about this movie, this is the movie is directed by Danny Boyle. I went into this movie thinking, oh, this is a Danny Boyle movie. I actually didn't do any research into what it was about. I hadn't seen it before we watched it for the podcast. And Danny Boyle out there, I gotta give it to the guy. This guy knows diversity in his film and his filmography. This is the guy. He did Trainspotting, a movie about drug addicts, and then he does something like 28 Days Later, like a zombie apocalypse movie. And these are all great movies, by the way. Then he did a sci-fi called Sunshine, where the sun's about to burn out. Slumdog Millionaire, the Oscar nominee. Won Best Picture that year, 2008. And then he did more recently 127 Hours. So this guy's got a great filmography. And I love all these movies. I just was shocked to see that Danny Boyle. I didn't know he would do a movie that gritty, or not gritty, just as intense as this. Even as intense as some of his other movies are. This is. Have you guys seen those other movies? And if so, how do you think it sort of stacks up against his other ones?
I've seen Slumdog Millionaire, 127 Hours. I have seen 28 Weeks Later. It's been
28 days.
No, I thought he did 28 weeks.
He did 28 days. He produced 28 weeks.
Okay, well, I've seen both of them, nonetheless. But it's been a while since I've seen. It's been a few years, so I can't really remember them very well. But the two most recent, Slumdog Millionaire and 127 Hours, very good movies. I can kind of see the same kind of slight darkness that was in Slumdog Millionaire, kind of similar to Trainspotting. I mean, of course, both movies are very different by story, but I can still kind of translate, you know, and see that, yes, this is definitely the same director, and he does a very good job of putting in just a little bit of darkness into his film. And then, you know, he does something like 127 Hours. It's just a very emotional, inspirational film about a guy just overcoming a great adversity. You know, just being stuck in a canyon for so long and surviving on so little and coming out of it alive and still doing the thing that got him into that situation and being a better person for it.
So, I mean, like, how do you think this one holds up against those movies there?
It would be one of his slightly above average, just compared to the ones that I've seen. I haven't seen a lot of his stuff. I've only seen four or five of the films that he's worked on. But I would say it doesn't surpass any of those that I've mentioned. I don't think it surpasses the 28 Days or 28 Weeks Later. Doesn't surpass Slumdog Millionaire or 127 Hours. But it's just below that.
And I think this is on par, for sure. So if you've seen a Danny Boyle movie and you like him, check this one out. It's a lot different than his other ones, but you know, this is definitely covering a different subject matter. All right, guys, what was your final grade for this one be, Daniel? What are you thinking?
Well, I think what the movie sets out to do, it does a very good job at, so I give some points for that. But in the end, I don't think I necessarily enjoyed the film, so I don't know. I'm thinking like a B-minus probably. I think it does a very good job at being realistic about the situation and the drugs and all that sort of thing, but I just didn't really like the film.
Okay.
Outside of that, so I'm gonna go with B minus.
That's fair. All right, Bama, what's your final grade?
I'm gonna agree with Stoll on pretty much everything he said. You know, great characters, good camera work, music was pretty spot on for this. But yet again, I have to keep going back to the story, and it just feeling like a big anti-drug ad. Despite all of the good things that I mentioned about the movie, I didn't really enjoy it as much as I thought I would, because I love Ewan McGregor. I mean, you gotta love Obi-Wan, right? But as far as this film goes, I can't really find too much enjoyment for it. I'm actually going to give this, I believe, my lowest score that I've given on this podcast. I'm going to give it a C.
Oh, C. Okay, well, I'm going to disagree with you here. I don't think this is a big, giant anti-drug ag. I think it is a character drama about people who do drugs, and ultimately it doesn't paint a good picture. But I think that's just, I mean, like, there's not really drugs is just generally not a good thing. I mean, I think we can all agree that, you know,
right,
being a drug is not good. I think this is less of a drug ad than another movie I've seen that's also incredibly shocking. I think even more so than this movie was Red Wake for Dream. That was a big anti-drug ad. It was an excellent movie, but it's so painful to sit through. So I'm not going to mark points for that, because I think this felt like more of a kind of, this actually felt like a legitimate character story. There wasn't much of a character drama. It wasn't as much of a story as it was character study. Same struggle as you guys. I think this movie does a lot really well. I'm going to go ahead and give it a B, because I think there's a lot of value in this movie. I think if you're interested in looking at a movie that portrays the drug culture from the inside perspective, not the outside perspective, this is a one-of-a-kind type of movie. But I also think, you know, along with what Stoll said, this movie is really great, and I appreciate what it's doing, but I'm never going to own this one. I'm never going to buy it, and if I don't think I'd watch it again unless there was a specific set of circumstances. Just, not only because it was uncomfortable, but because it just didn't leave me wanting more. So it gets a B, so maybe I'll give a higher grade than you guys, because I think it does a lot so well, and I think there's a lot of value here, but it's just, as far as rewatchability, you know, not one I'm going to recommend. So, our final score of a B. All right, let's go ahead and move into our buzz section so get us fired up. Bama, what are you fired up about this week?
All right, this one's going to be, this isn't something that only I'm buzzed about, but I think that some Lord of the Rings fans would be interested in seeing. I've mentioned these guys before during the podcast, the people from Rooster Teeth, who have done Red versus Blue, the internet show that's based in the world of Halo. A couple of their employees went to a convention in Australia, and they had the next week after the convention off, so they decide, hey, let's go to New Zealand, where a lot of the scenes from Lord of the Rings were from, and actually where Hobbiton, an actual town that's built like with actual hobbit homes and things like that. Let's go visit that. And they decide, well, we have 6 days here, or our plane leaves to go back to the U.S. So why don't we try to go to Mordor? And so they kind of go on the meet of one does not simply walk into Mordor, and they document themselves actually walking to Mordor. The name of the series is A Simple Walk to Mordor. It's a 120-mile trek from Hobbiton to the mountain that was portrayed as Mordor for the film. So it's I've watched the first episode. It's up on their website, roosterteeth.com. I mean, I'm guessing they're probably going to do 6 episodes of it. I don't know. They may split it up into more. But it seems pretty interesting just to see, you know, the actual simple walk to Mordor.
So, what are you fired up about? And it better not be a volcano called Mount Doom.
It is not a volcano. We've brought this show up on the podcast before, The Walking Dead, and I was behind. I hadn't been able to see the episodes as they actually aired, so I've actually caught up now, and they do, as AMC does with several of the shows, I believe, they do a mid-season finale where they cut off mid-season. They do, they've done 8 episodes, and they just cut off, and they're going to come back next spring, but it's cut off for now, and they're down for now. It's not the end of season 3, it's just in the middle of it. But I finally caught up, and I watched through all the episodes and stuff like that. And like I think Kayla brought up before, I think they've got, this season has been a lot better than their previous seasons, specifically episode 4 and on. They have, ice has gotten really good. I've enjoyed the series up to this point, but now I'm almost to the point where I'm hooked. I'm not hooked yet, but I'm almost there. The last couple episodes have been extremely good, and the plot has done a lot of cool things, and I'm really excited about what they're doing. So that's something that I finally caught up on, and I've really started to enjoy it this season.
I've actually got some anti-buzz. What has got me fired up? Problem in the gaming culture, okay? So last Friday, I'm just chilling, flipping through channels, because I actually have the night off once school's done. And what do you know? The Video Game Awards on Spike, the VGA, is on. And I'm like, huh, we'll check it out. I've had issues in the past, and I'll watch it. Boy, people, can I just say, as a gamer, it is insulting to our intelligence, that award show. It is a giant commercial filled with celebrities, hot girls, and gaming trailers, okay? Now, that's all cool if you're trying to have an E3 type of trailer coming. That's cool. But I want a real award show, and I know video gaming is not have that classy sense like maybe the Oscars does, and I don't expect that. But, I mean, come on. We can't sell gamers short. It's not good. Like it's all people swearing and explosions. You know, just all sorts of a light show, new trailers thrown out. And I was really kind of disgusted as a guy. I'm like, you know what? We're better than this. I know we're not all class A people. I know video gaming is not considered highbrow, but I mean, come on. I mean, like it was like boiling down gamers to like the lowest denominator of entertainment, and I found it to be kind of disappointing. There were some cool trailers to be said, but I mean, when you have people like Jessica Alba and Samuel Jackson get on stage and blatantly artificially talk about how much they love gaming, when I was a young girl, I fell in love with the Mario Brothers. Oh, sell it to me, Jessica Alba. I mean, come on. I mean, you sound so convincing. I mean, and there was a lot of stuff like that. You know, if you're a gamer, I think gamers should get behind it and complain and say, hey, we want something that's a little better. Don't sell us our video game award show. Give us a real award show, because right now it's basically just boiled down to a giant commercial. How many people can we get to watch by throwing celebrities and trailers at it, you know? And I want a legit award show. And that was something that really had me fired up. I was really upset about it, and I was like, you know what, I think we went, and luckily this year was the first year in a while they didn't have Call of Duty sweeping in the awards, because you know everyone loves to see Call of Duty in the awards. But yeah, so that was something I was definitely fired up about this week. Opening this weekend in theaters as we close out is a little movie. It's coming out. Might have heard of it. It's called The Hobbit: The Unexpected Journey. It's gonna have Ian McKellen as Gandalf is gonna come back, and we're gonna tell. It's not really a prequel, because honestly, The Hobbit came first. We're going to go back to the beginnings of the story of The Lord of the Rings, and this is actually telling a very different story that is connected to Lord of the Rings. And we're going to get to see some dwarves go get the gold back. All right, we're going to close out, because there's no other movies worth reporting coming out. There's not The Hobbit. I mean, let's just face it, folks. I mean, no one cares. No one knows.
True.
This is The Hobbit. Well, we're going to go ahead, and don't forget to follow us at BCD Flixtures on Twitter, and you can follow me personally at BigCalKenobi91 or at Masters Review. And Facebook, you can get it on the Facebook group. You can like us. Please like us. We're trying to get up to 30 likes.
Comment.
And at 23, and yes, comments. We want feedback. We've talked to a couple people. We like suggestions. We want recommendations, because we want to see what you guys want to listen to and what you want to talk about.
Shout out to one of our listeners that we just found out that was one of our listeners.
Yeah.
Christopher Tobin.
Christopher. His name is Tobin. There is no Christopher. There
Whoa. He listens to us? Wow.
He does.
I know, right?
He's actually given us some suggestions. So, Tobin, if you would, please... remind us of those suggestions that you told us the other day at B-Dubs. we would really like to take those into account.
That's right, people won't be dubs. We get to meet friends, you get to reconnect with friends and family from across the
country. For those of you that don't understand, B-Dubs is Buffalo Wild
Wings. If you don't, get out. You don't understand Buffalo Wings. All right, make sure and tune in next week for our Christmas special, our final podcast before Christmas, when we review everybody's most favorite Christmas movie ever. Not Die Hard, not the Santa Claus, and definitely not Elf. The Nightmare Before Christmas.
What do you have against Elf?
That movie is one of the most overrated Christmas movies ever.
You just said that about The Nightmare Before Christmas.
And that is another one that's one of the most overrated Christmas movies.
They're both the most overrated Christmas movie ever. Both of them are.
No, they're one of the most overrated Christmas movies ever. All right, so tune in. Nightmare Before Christmas, and you're going to see us fight over this one, I think. So we'll make sure you want to see what I say. All right, until next week, remember, one does not simply walk into Mordor.
Kill the Batman.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
I'm a dude playing a dude disguised as another dude.
Game over.